Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. All of it brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Right now, listeners to Three Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/martini. More on that later in the podcast. And Jim, a delightful follow-up to yesterday's crazy martini, because yesterday's crazy martini was actually a really, really bad one. We talked about the Latino Victory Fund advocacy ad that's really on behalf of Ralph Northam. Officially, it was just targeting Ed Gillespie. The Washington Post editorial board has taken issue with this ad in a very significant way. I'll let them describe the ad if you weren't with us yesterday. The minute-long spot from the Latino Victory Fund depicted a pickup truck being driven by a sinister-looking white man, flying a Confederate flag and sporting a Gillespie bumper sticker as it chased down a group of terrified brown-skinned children. Titled American Nightmare, the ad ended with the children waking up from a nightmare and adults watching television footage of August torch-bearing white nationalist march in Charlottesville with the line, "Is this what Donald Trump and Ed Gillespie mean by the American dream?" And so while they go on to talk about why they think Ed Gillespie has actually been the far more grossly negative candidate in this race, it goes on to say, but just because Mr. Gillespie has resorted to gutter tactics, which we could debate, doesn't give others leave to do the same. The Latino Victory Fund ad was vile. Among other faults, it glossed over the fact that Mr. Gillespie condemned the white supremacist violence in Charlottesville far more directly than did President Trump. Quote, Ralph Northam would not have run this ad and believes Virginians deserve civility, not escalation. A spokesman for Mr. Northam emailed us. That was before the Latino Victory Fund announced Tuesday night that it was pulling the ad, issuing a statement that cited recent events. Maybe that was a reference to Tuesday night's truck attack in Manhattan. It is sad that it took such a tragedy for the group to realize how out of bounds its ad was. It's also sad that someone who promises to be a governor for all Virginians didn't call them out right away. So, Jim, the Washington Post has endorsed Northam. They're strongly in his corner. No surprise there. But you know you've really gone over the deep end when in the last week of an election, the Post will dedicate an editorial to slamming their candidate for not condemning this ad more.
Yeah, and you may remember earlier this week I had said I wanted to see the Washington Post editorial board do this. They struck me as one of the key offenders who would constantly call for civility, but then not do enough to call out people who they are more ideologically aligned with. When they cross over the line. Now, there's a lot to unpack here. We should point out that Ed Gillespie has been running a lot of campaign ads that focus on the issue of restoring voting rights and other rights to convicted felons. Among them, this also means once you get your voting rights back, it makes it a little bit easier to obtain your right to purchase and own a firearm. Ed Gillespie's ads are featuring a really vile guy convicted of having probably one of the largest collections of child porn in the nation. It is, not the sort of thing you want to watch when you're clicking through the channels and there's a commercial break and you see the mugshot of the guy. It is a hot ad, you could say. It is definitely incendiary. It is definitely not pleasant viewing. And it's probably fair to say, look, Ralph Northam, for all of his flaws, would never voluntarily say, yeah, I want this, terrible man to get his voting rights act. However, Northam's position has been, we believe that convicted felons, once they've done their time, should get their voting rights back and also, by the way, make it easier for them to obtain firearms. I think that, there's been this, and lots of Democrats believe that this was some sort of continuing injustice, that once you've paid your debt to society, by golly, you should get your right to vote back, that this was racially discriminatory, that this was an effort to suppress voter turnout, that this was the system being just too harsh and too mean to people who have already paid their debt to society. Well, this guy qualifies under the program of giving the felons their voting rights back. And Gillespie, to me, and Northam indeed said that this program to give these felons their voting rights back was one of his proudest accomplishments. Now, did he mean this particular guy? No. I think it's safe to say Ralph Northam is not a friend of this guy, a supporter of this guy, and if given the chance to alter the policy, might have done so, but he didn't. And Gillespie's taken a shot at him over this. Now, we can argue about this, but at least it's based in policy. At least it's an argument about whether, and Gillespie has a new ad which features him talking to the camera saying, I believe in restoring the rights of felons after proper review. I don't want to do this in a blanket way. I don't want to do this for violent offenders in cases like this. So there, at least you can make the argument Gillespie's point of view is on policy. This Latino Victory Fund ad was basically just saying people who have Ed Gillespie bumper stickers want to chase down children. They want to run them down. They want them to run in fear. And I saw all kinds of people trying to defend this ad saying, well, it really is about the dreamers, except nothing in the ad actually specifies that these kids are dreamers. It's really about immigration raids and deporting kids. Well, actually, no, I mean, like, is your argument we shouldn't deport people? The whole point of this ad is to say Republicans are bad people and that Republicans are indistinguishable from the people who marched in Charlottesville. And even the Washington Post editorial board can say, whoa, 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 that's not good. Because here's the thing. Ben Shapiro wrote about this with great eloquence today. If you want to run an ad like that, you will get more Donald Trumps, right? That is a crotch kick of an ad to Republicans. And a lot of Republicans who have nothing to do with the Charlottesville crowd and who will denounce that Charlottesville crowd. But if you want to do more of that, you're going to get more Donald Trumps. You're going to get more Republicans like who basically emulate that style of, I will denounce Democrats in the most incendiary way possible. And if this is the way we want our politics to be, fine. I applaud the Washington Post editorial board for stepping in, blowing the whistle and saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. We cannot demand better politics and then say, oh, by the way, the other side is trying to murder children. So that's where we are. That's where it stands. And I give them a little bit of credit for this. It's also worth noting the Latino Victory ad. You know, like, in question, if there had not been this awful terror attack in New York, would they have pulled the ad? It's a little frightening thinking of, if it's the wrong thing to do, it's the wrong thing to do, not, you know, the wrong thing to do because of outside events.
Exactly. And there's a good reason why Ralph Northam was so slow to denounce it, because the Virginia Democratic Party essentially sent out the same message. It just didn't involve trucks and kids running for their lives. They sent out a flyer paid for by the State Democratic Party in Virginia that says on Tuesday, November 7th, Virginia gets to stand up to hate. And there's a picture of Trump, a separate picture of Gillespie, and underneath it is the torch rally from Charlottesville. So the idea that the Democrats are appalled by what the Latino Victory Fund did is ridiculous. Northam defended that flyer, saying that Ed Gillespie didn't denounce the president. Yes, he forcefully denounced the white supremacists, but he didn't pick apart what the president had to say in response to Charlottesville. So that's why it's a totally legitimate flyer. Anyway, let's move on to the reason the Latino Victory Fund pulled that ad. And sadly, it's because of a terrorist attack that involved a truck killing 8 people. And that was in Manhattan on the Lower West Side, not too far from the old World Trade Center site. This is an Uzbekistan immigrant who came to the country, we believe, in 2010. It is pretty clear that he is ISIS-inspired. In fact, I don't know exactly how to say this guy's name, Saifulo Saipov, 29 years old, actually told police he is pleased with his actions and is unapologetic for the attack. He drove his rented Home Depot truck down a bicycle path, hurting a lot of people, killing 8, 11 others injured. And Jim, the good news is here is that it was pretty clear right away, and most people aren't trying to run away from it, although some on the left are still trying to say it's an isolated incident, so we can't paint too broadly with the brush. Trump wants to use this as a reason to get rid of the visa lottery, saying it should be a merit-based legal immigration system that we have. Governor Andrew Cuomo, who we usually don't use quotes from here in a positive way, saying what another problem is here, and that's that this person seems to have been radicalized right here in the good old U.S. of A.
After he came to the United States is when he started to become informed about ISIS and radical Islamic tactics. We have no evidence yet of associations or a continuing plot or associated plots. And our only evidence to date is that this was an isolated incident that he himself performed. ISIS has gotten it down to a simple formula that they can put on the internet. Yeah. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to rent a car, rent a truck.
He actually used the term radical Islam there, Jim, which is a pretty big step for a lot of prominent politicians on the left. Odd media coverage in the early stages of this. a lot of finger pointing, people jockeying for their political narrative as the details came in. But in the end, it's a pretty clear cut case that this threat, just because we've largely eradicated ISIS from Iraq and Syria, doesn't mean the threat has really gone anywhere.
Yeah, Greg, by the way, worth noting, I will not critique you if you mispronounce his name. I don't think any of us care. You kill a lot of people. This really is the least punishment he deserves. One of the things that comes, if people want to say it is too soon, people are still being treated in the hospital. We don't like it when people instantly call for gun control after a mass shooting. We should not call for immigration changes right after a terror attack. I can see that perspective. I'd just like them to know how many hours or days. I mean, if they want to wait 48 hours, 72 hours, fine. But I do think it is worthwhile to look at this immigration question, the policy, the diversity program he was brought in under. We are now being learning that apparently this figure was interviewed in 2015 by federal agents because he was listed as the point of contact for two men on the counterterrorism list. A very familiar pattern to us, Greg, that once again, this guy, we have a person who's committing an act of terror who was already on either on a watch list or had already encountered federal authorities before. We saw this with the Orlando shooter. We saw this with San Bernardino. We've seen most people who go out and commit terror attacks have already had some sort of encounter with federal law enforcement for the specific reason of possibly having Islamist terror ties. The other thing which jumped out at me, I wrote about this in The Jolt today, that just seems odd. Look, I don't want to be seen as promoting conspiracy theories or anything like that, but I have noticed that there is this weird pattern during or immediately after what turns out to be a terror attack of some narrative coming forward saying, no, it's not a terror attack. No, trust us, it's not Islamism, it's not terrorism. And I go through a couple of them. San Bernardino was initially, people were declaring, oh no, this is workplace violence. This is something like that. Then Orlando, people insisted, no, this really wasn't Islamism. This was a self-loathing a man who was gay, who couldn't deal with it and lashed out in violent homophobia. Well, the guy pledged his loyalty to ISIS on the 911 call. So there really shouldn't have been that much confusion after that particular attack. The infamous underwear bomber back in 2009. At first we heard, oh, no, it's just firecrackers. It was just some nut who had fire. No, it was an Islamist terror attack. And now with this one of the things that struck me, the first thing you hear, a truck is ran down a bunch of people in New York City. A lot of people's first thought is going to be of, oh, my goodness, that's just like what happened in France. Happened in Nice, happened at the Christmas market in the German cities. We've seen this sort of attack before. It happened in London a few times. We kind of look at it and say, okay, is that terrorism? Now, look, it's early and people say, oh, people in the news media shouldn't speculate. Look, it's part of the natural human condition for people to look for patterns, right? When this happens, not that far from ground zero, people are going to start wondering this. And in fact, if you look at the location of this is a bike path that is actually separated from the main road by a barrier and a couple of trees and stuff like that. So it's not like a truck accidentally, the driver loses control and he ends up on the sidewalk or something like that. It was one of those things where it would take deliberate effort to get onto this bike path. And yet, very quickly, within a few minutes of the initial reports, on Twitter, you started hearing people claiming this was, it was two truck drivers who had a fight. Which did not make sense. And it's from a couple Twitter accounts that I'm not terribly familiar with and seems a little bit odd. And also apparently people quoting unnamed sources insisting this is not terrorism related. Well, now we know very explicitly this was terrorism related. This was in fact exactly what it looked like. This was exactly what people's worst suspicions and fears were. And I don't know whether this is standard issue confusion on breaking news, conflicting eyewitness accounts, this the usual confusion and wrong memories and things like that occur during a circumstance like this, or whether this is someone where people, when something terrible happens, people don't want it to be terrorism, so they start putting out alternate explanations and or misinformation, disinformation, or simply untrue statements, lies, not things that are not factually true, out there to muddy the waters. Maybe I'm getting paranoid in my old age, Greg, but it just seems very strange how often we see these things. I mean, again, why would someone within minutes of this attack begin telling, media sources I'm not terribly familiar with, this unidentified NYPD official saying the incident in downtown Manhattan is not terror related? How do they know? How would they possibly know that early? And the other thing is this alternate narrative of two truck drivers get into a fight, and that's what causes this. It doesn't match what actually happened at all. So that's your paranoia-inducing thought for the day, a terrible day in New York City. Obviously, thoughts and prayers going out to all of these victims, and a nagging sense that we are generally winning. We're making great progress against ISIS, but the war is far from done. And the possibilities of these lone wolves, or perhaps more accurately described, known wolves, that threat is still with us, Greg.
Ugh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Some of these media people, some of these media outlets might need to hire better breaking news people. And if you do, ZipRecruiter might be the way you want to go. Because if you're hiring, you know that quality hires keep your business moving forward. But you also know it can take a lot of time to find the right candidate for the job.
With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to more than 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing that your job is going to be seen by the right candidates. ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work for you, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you will receive the best possible matches. That's what makes ZipRecruiter different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And you can even get a head start on the interview process by adding screening questions to your job post to help identify the most qualified candidates. So you don't have to waste time sorting through a stack of resumes to find the perfect fit.
No wonder 80% of employers, 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. How much simpler would that make your life? And the easy-to-use ZipRecruiter dashboard lets you manage your hiring process from start to finish, all in one place. ZipRecruiter clearly is the smartest way to hire. And right now, find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners here on 3 Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/martini. ZipRecruiter.com/martini. One more time. Go try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/martini. Jim, we're back at it when it comes to the congressional Republicans and major legislative agendas here as we head into the crazy martini. Stop me if you've heard this before. Actually, no, just let me finish. This is from Politico. House Republicans postponed the much-anticipated rollout of their tax reform proposal Tuesday night, an ominous sign for a direly needed legislative accomplishment for President Donald Trump and his party. In a move that foreshadows the difficulties awaiting the party of Reagan, GOP leaders and tax writers postponed their big reveal to buy themselves more time. They now hope to release the bill Thursday, but privately acknowledge they have a number of disagreements to resolve first. The delay comes despite the half decade Republicans have been writing themselves for this very moment. So, Jim, the media loves the Republican infighting. There are a few things they love more than that. But again, just like with the Obamacare repeal, we've had half a dozen years, more than that, really, to get the plans in place, get the ducks in a row. And when we finally have the chance, it's still not ready.
Heck, Greg, it's November. Let's assume that they, we need a tax reform plan on January 20th, that they don't even start thinking about this until Trump becomes president. You know, we're now in the neighborhood of approaching 11 months. And a couple of the ideas that have been floated around really seem the sort of concepts where you start wondering why you would elect Republicans. I do not like this notion of taxing 401ks and retirement funds. I think saving for retirement is a good thing. Generally, you have two options. You can tax it when you're putting it into your retirement savings account, or you can tax it when you get it out. But the whole point is you shouldn't ever get taxed twice. This strikes me as a sort of thrift. This is diligence. This is prudence. These are all these kind of good conservative words and the sort of behavior we want to encourage. It just doesn't make a lot of sense for Republicans to get this nominal new tax revenue to help make the proposal more revenue neutral. And in the process, damage a program that is probably one of the best aspects of the tax code. Whether or not you like the idea of keeping the deductibility of state and local taxes really depends on where you live. There are a lot of conservatives out there who are like, okay, I don't like New York. I don't like New Jersey. I don't like California. I don't like Illinois and Minnesota are up there. And they're like, okay, by golly, let's make life miserable for people in those in those states. Let's not allow them to deduct that anymore. This is effectively a subsidy to those deep blue states. We need to make the people in those areas know just how badly they're being taxed. Well, here's the problem. There are a lot of people who did vote for Trump in New York, New Jersey, California, Illinois, and Minnesota. They maybe, you know, they weren't in the numbers to help Trump win the state, but those were all people who voted for Trump and Republicans in the local House and Senate offices or elections because they expected they'd be getting a tax cut. So if you finance this tax cut by taking away the deduction that they already enjoy, surprise, surprise, they end up with a much smaller tax cut than they otherwise would have gotten. And as a result of that, you have something where people really kind of thought they'd be getting a tax cut and more money in their pocket and spending that and helping the economy. And now they don't. I don't know if I necessarily like the idea of punishing people because they are in a place where more Democrats vote than Republicans vote. You see people on Twitter saying, like, well, those people should move. Well, maybe they don't want to move, or maybe they work on Wall Street, or maybe they work on some position that's not easily transferred from. This idea that I've never liked the idea of punishing people because they live in an area with more members of the opposite party than the party you prefer. So those two aspects have been discussed for a while. Obviously, either one of those would cause a considerable amount of consternation in the Republican caucuses in the House and Senate. Greg, I don't know about you. I want Republicans to cut taxes, you know, as much as possible across the board for as many people as possible that you could do in a reasonable way for the maximum economic impact. I thought that's why we did this. To get anything further into that seems a little bit in that area of social engineering we used to make fun of liberals for. But hey, they got another day or two to work it out, and hopefully it won't have any of this controversial stuff in there.
I'm sure they'll all be on the same page within 48 hours. I'm sure of it, especially in the Senate. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to visit our friends at ZipRecruiter. And remember, right now you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/martini. And tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.